The fourth final case of the day, 18-12679, Rojas versus the City of Ocala. And take your time, but I see that we have Ms. Sutherland here for the appellant. Ms. Miller here for the appellee. Sutherland, correct pronunciation? Very well. You may proceed whenever you're ready. No hurry.
In the fall of 2014, when the city of Ocala experienced several shootings that resulted in injury to two young children and an infant, the police department immediately responded by employing numerous methods to apprehend the suspects. At the time, tensions were very high, and the police faced significant challenges in convincing witnesses to come forward. The vigil that was held here by the community and supported vocally by the police department is no different.
Counsel, I think we've got that if you get to the issues.
Sure, Your Honor. So, the first issue obviously is one of standing. A more modest approach on standing is required here.
More, when you say more modest, you mean more modest than what? I mean, are we not sort of hemmed in on standing by Rabin, Kondratiev, and the others?
So it's very true that there's a significant contradiction between Valley Forge, Rabin, and Kondratiev.
But you know, our cases post-date Valley Forge. Look, you know, I've been there, right? And I've said, I don't quite understand, but we've said what we've said in Rabin and Kondratiev.
Unfortunately, in this case, the facts are so different that you aren't hemmed in by Rabin or Kondratiev. Here, plaintiffs face a significant challenge because their standing is based on what can only be described as manufactured standing. Their contact with the one-time community prayer vigil was both voluntary and intentional. Plaintiffs assumed a special burden to attend the vigil, and plaintiffs admit that their purpose in attending was in part to observe what they believed would be offensive conduct.
So I'll have to confess, like, I agree with you. At least I am sympathetic to your view about Mr. Rojas. That is a startling thing to say in a declaration. I went to see if there were going to be any violations of the establishment clause. You know, Ms. Hale also said, I attended because I wanted to observe what happened to see how religious it would be and to see the extent of city and police involvement. I also felt that my personal presence would be a form of protest. In fairness, though, maybe it's Mr. Hale, Mrs. Hale, one of the Hales. Don't either one of them or both of them say, like, I've got a legitimate interest in being there. I care about violence in the community. I really would have liked to have participated, but I felt excluded once I was there. So can we sort of paint with so broad a brush to say they were all just there manufacturing their own standing?
I do believe that Mr. Hale and Mrs. Hale both testified that they were concerned about community violence and that they wanted to participate in the vigil. They are also clear, however, that they went to the vigil to express their opposition to what they knew would occur, which is a prayer vigil. Mr. Hale, who has now passed away and is no longer a plaintiff in this lawsuit, also indicated that he and his wife spoke with with Chief Graham at the prayer vigil and was able to dialogue with him and talk with him about the community events, also another event that was coming up. So I think all of those facts combined indicate that there was no attempt to be a part of the vigil upon attending. The intent was always to oppose it and express their opposition to it. And I think, obviously, this court's holding in Rabin and Kondratiev distinguishes between a mere offense and a metaphysical and spiritual injury. And when you look at the cases that have found a metaphysical or spiritual injury, there are several common components to those cases. There's regular contact. Most of the plaintiffs either had to assume a special burden to avoid it, or they were encountering the cross monuments, and all of them are monument cases for the most part, to a legislative prayer cases, but they had to encounter those on a regular basis. None of these cases involved a single event, and in none of these cases did the plaintiffs testify that their intention was to assume a special burden and encounter the constitutional violation or the alleged constitutional violation.
So can I just ask you a quick question about that? I mean, is your point about the single incident or repeated offense that a single truly offensive episode can't give rise to standing? That just seems sort of like an odd way to think about vindicating constitutional rights.
I think it depends on the facts, and this court has actually emphasized in two cases, two Establishment Clause standing cases, that the facts and the context of a particular case matter, and you can't just pull one fact out and decide the case on that single fact. So when you look at all of the facts and you consider, well, what does, and Your Honor has noted, it's very difficult, what is the difference between mere offense and metaphysical and spiritual harm? And again, I think the common component is that you encounter it over and over again, or you have to go out of your way not to encounter it, or in your daily activities, you have to regularly view it. And so I think that's what amounts to a metaphysical or spiritual harm. There's actually no allegation of metaphysical and spiritual harm here. I think the only allegation is that they were offended and they disagreed with it. So I think that's the distinction.
So I would have thought, just to play devil's advocate for a minute, I would have thought that one distinction might be in rethinking about Valley Forge. Did the plaintiffs in Valley Forge, it was something about the use of property or something, right? Did they ever sort of like witness the violation occurring, so to speak? Or was it something that was just sort of within their knowledge that this property is being misused or some such? And I mean, I wonder if the difference between psychological and spiritual is that psychological is something that is just a figment of your imagination. I know this is happening somewhere in the world and it disturbs me. And spiritual is like, holy cow, I'm seeing this thing that offends me. I'm not sure that's a valid distinction, but is that the distinction between Valley Forge on the one hand and Rabin and Kondratiev on the other?
I think if you did not have the benefit of more recent case precedent, Supreme Court precedent, that could potentially be the line that is drawn. But I think with more recent case precedent, and when you look at what the court has talked about as far as the difference between, let's say, a student being subjected to a prayer and mature adults being subjected to a prayer, the Supreme Court is not sympathetic to the claim that offense or exclusion, when confronted with a prayer, is sufficient. Town of Greece, the court in Town of Greece was very, very clear about that. I want to move really quickly to the issue, the Establishment Clause violation, which the landscape since the district court issued its opinion is very different, obviously, now. The plaintiffs demand that and still insist the Lemon Test applies here. At the time the district court issued its decision, it was somewhat debatable. Legislative prayer cases were determined by history and traditions test. Monument cases, still primarily under Lemon. And it was based upon the monument cases that the court relied and issued its decision. One of the primary considerations was, because prayer is quintessentially religious, any involvement by the city or the police department is per se unconstitutional, especially under the Lemon test. I think with the benefit of Marsh, Town of Greece, and most recently American Legion, which refused to apply the Lemon test to monument cases, and the opinion does seem to extend that to monuments, symbolism, and religious ceremonies, that a history and tradition test governs here. And when you look at the history and tradition of our nation, calling for prayer and asking citizens to unite and pray in the face of difficult times and crisis, it's very hard to reconcile with the lower court's decision.
Can I just like ask you to nerd out with me for just a minute about history and tradition? I've never been quite clear about sort of the nature of that analysis. What does that mean exactly? History, I think I understand. Like history, in the way that originalism is ascendant today, you would look to historical context to understand what the meaning of the phrase establishment of religion was ordinarily understood to convey in 1791. What does tradition mean exactly? Does it really sort of boil down to the view, sort of like an American Legion, and that's a tough opinion to make sort of heads or tails of about who's got how many votes for what, but that, like, I don't know, if something's pretty old, it's good to go?
I think the way the Supreme Court has consistently looked at it, and as they revisited an American Legion in a couple of places in their opinion, is has this practice been ongoing for several hundred to 200 years? I mean, some of the examples the Supreme Court provides date back to 200 years. And the point that the Supreme Court has made time and time again, in fact, the point they made in Town of Greece is a great example. At the time the First Amendment was enacted, congressional legislative prayer, use of chaplains to offer religious guidance and services, even paid chaplains, that was a practice that was already occurring and taking place. And so clearly the intent of the First Amendment was not to abolish those practices. Whereas with school prayer, there were no public schools at the time. And so when the court refers to history and tradition, I think that's what they're referring to. And
there were no police vigils at the time, were there?
I'm honestly not certain. The examples that we have provided are pretty closely aligned with community vigils. You have presidents that are actively calling for prayer. You actually have presidents who are leading the nation in prayer. You have chaplains, obviously.
So your position, so we can understand it, is that what happened in this case, the city of Ocala can make it a regular first Monday every month, we're going to have a prayer vigil about all the problems facing our community and all the crime victims and all the violence and the whole business. And we'll have preachers there to lead it. And we'll have police officers praying in the whole business, and y'all come on out. And that doesn't violate the establishment clause because of some history and tradition.
Here, it's important to note that the facts are a little bit different. Here, the police department did not plan or lead the vigil. Volunteer chaplains for the police department certainly led the vigil.
I understand you took part in the vigil, but you can't get past that Facebook page in terms of where the leadership for it and the announcement about it and the statements of the chief at that time and so forth. I mean, it makes it very clear that it was sponsored, endorsed, and urged. Participation was urged by the city.
If I could,
but certainly to a significant extent.
If I could highlight just some of the evidence that's been presented that I think draws the line between a police department supporting and encouraging attendance at a vigil and promoting, planning, and funding it. There is no evidence to indicate that they were planning and funding it. In fact, the corroborating testimony of the private citizen, Reverend Quintana and Chief Graham all affirm that the private citizens were the one planning the event. Police regularly were kept informed about how the event would occur, when it would occur, because police, as established in the record, regularly attended these events. So the Facebook post is most akin to a president calling for prayer and inviting citizens to join him.
Can I ask you one sort of nitpicky question about the Facebook post? I'm not sure that this is enough, but there is one line in it that I think is pretty troubling. When the sign, it's on the, you know, the police department's letterhead, so to speak, signed by the chief of police alongside a community activist, and it says, "We're facing a crisis in the city of Ocala and Marion County that requires fervent prayer and your presence." What about the requires your presence piece? This is sort of, I don't want to like get too carried away here, but it's sort of like a command to appear, signed by the chief of police.
I I think it's more like an invitation. I think urging the community to be a part of it is what was occurring here. There's no testimony by plaintiffs that they felt compelled to attend. They were very clear that they wanted to attend here, that they did not feel required to. They wanted to. And so based upon that evidence, I don't think that even if you were considering the what others interpreted the letter to say, that the evidence supports that here. I think it was merely an invitation. And I just want to, if could I just take 1 minute to...
Sure, continue? Please.
I just wanted to point out that the vigil that occurred here really is no different than hundreds that still, that have taken place for hundreds of years or 100 years and are still taking place today. Just a few days ago, less than 8 miles from here, the Montgomery District Attorney's Office participated in a vigil at the True Divine Baptist Church to remember victims of violence. The district attorney spoke at the event, and a picture of the DA's office symbol was directly behind him, front and center on the stage. Another example, just last month, in Indianapolis, city leaders held a prayer vigil at a local church wherein the Indianapolis Metro Police Department chief spoke from the pulpit and asked the community to step up and help fight crime throughout Indianapolis. I think these are just a few examples of the history and tradition.
Therefore,
what?
Therefore, Indianapolis, it happened in Montgomery, therefore it must be constitutional.
Well, I think it's...
I've never heard Montgomery held up.
I think what it supports is that there is history and tradition here, and the history and tradition test is the proper test to apply here when considering an Establishment Clause violation. Just 3 days ago, in oral arguments for the Supreme Court, Coach Kennedy's prayer case was presented. And if there was any doubt about whether Lemon still applied, at least to this line of cases that apply here, Justice Kavanaugh noted that it's been more than 2 decades since the Supreme Court has applied the Lemon test. And so based upon those facts, based upon Marsh, Town of Greece, American Legion, I think it's very clear that the history and tradition test applies here.
Okay, very well. You have your 3 minutes of rebuttal remaining. Ms. Miller, let's hear from you.
Good afternoon, and may it please the court. I will address some of the points that my friend made, but I will start off by just prefacing this by saying that the people do have a right to control their own prayer, and that when the government overreaches and attempts to influence and control the people's prayer, it usurps its authority under the Constitution and violates the First Amendment, as well as undermines the fabric of our republic. Allowing the church, allowing the government to take autonomy, take control and ownership over prayers and to promote them in a way that manifests itself in an hour-long religious service for 500 to 700 people in the heart of town.
Can I ask you a favor? Before we get there, let's talk about standing, sort of blocking and tackling of standing. Mm-hmm. So should I be as troubled as I am by the Rojas affidavit, which I do find just stunning in its candor, A-plus for candor. But, you know, I went to see if they would violate the Establishment Clause.
Your Honor, a few things. First of all, as you know, the law is that there's a direct unwelcome contact, and there's been no overruling of that standard. And you are correct that in Valley Forge, there was no contact whatsoever. These folks have been community members for 7 to 10 years. The Hales testified they'd been taxpayers for 7 years. There's nothing in the law that says you can't go witness your government violating the Constitution.
What is Rojas? Hold on 1 sec. What is Rojas? I get the Hales. I think you may be right about the Hales, but I'm curious about Rojas and the limits of the standing principle that you're advocating. What about Rojas? Does he say that he was a community member or cared about violence, any of that stuff?
Yes, he did. They all testified, and the district court found that the plaintiffs were completely credible. The Hales had lost a son or a child to murder, and they were all here saying, we want to help the community. Jean Porgel, who also passed away, one of our plaintiffs, she also testified that she was there as an interested citizen who wanted to curb the crime. These are all...
I mean, what Rojas said.
What I recall Rojas saying was something to the effect of that he was interested to see the extent to which they were violating the Constitution.
Yeah, right. Anything else? That's my question, curiosity.
I don't find anything troubling, to be honest. If you're troubled by the fact that that they said, you know, we're going to the nuisance if that's the concern. That's, there's nothing in the law that says you can't go and be a citizen.
Counsel, I have the same problem with Mr. Rojas.
Okay, but
You can manufacture your claims. You can run around the country and manufacture claim budgets, going there in order to have a claim.
I see what you're saying. He didn't go around. He's from the community.
Suppose those were the facts. We write it in the opinion that he manufactured his claim.
Yeah, we wouldn't want that. That's Valley Forge.
Wouldn't want us to write that.
That's Valley Forge, where the folks are outside of the community. But these are taxpayers. They are residents of Marion County. They were invited by the police chief of their own community to attend this event, and they actually dialogued with the community, with the mayor. They had so many chances to cancel this event. It shouldn't have happened. And they said there's not multiple community organizers. There's
court said they were forced to choose. That Rojas was forced to choose.
To attend or not.
I don't see how he was forced to do anything. He had voluntarily appeared for the purpose of seeing whether or not the Constitution would be violated.
Ultimately, Your Honor, we can set Rojas aside because the law is...
All that forced to choose?
I believe that I would feel extremely compelled. I would want to go. If my government was, as a lawyer and a community member, if I knew my government was about to potentially violate the Constitution... I would basically, but what you're saying is I'd be foreclosed from going because then I would have to preserve my standing to not go. And I don't think that can be the law either. And I also...
Counsel, you're not addressing the argument. The fact that you would want to go to see if there's a violation only puts you in the same position as Rojas. It doesn't address whether someone who goes to an event expecting that there's going to be a constitutional violation and wanting to subject himself to a constitutional violation so he can sue as standing or not.
I see.
It's referred to, you may not agree with the term, but some people refer to it as manufactured standing.
I understand, Your Honor.
One of these plaintiffs said, I wanted to participate in the vigil, but not a religious vigil. Well, she's fighting the hypothetical. From the get-go, this was intended to be a religious vigil. Everybody knew that. She didn't want to participate in the vigil. She wanted them to have another vigil or a different vigil than this one.
Yes, Your Honor. Well, the plaintiffs have a right to attend government events free from the government creating... this is a government event, so you're saying that... citizens can't attend a government event because they're not religious? I mean, if this were a Muslim...
I'm saying that, Counsel, you don't further the argument by trying to recast the question you're being asked. The question is, if someone goes to an event knowing they're going to be offended and thinking that it's worthwhile going because I'll see a constitutional violation and I can sue for it, whether that is the kind of injury in fact, a concrete injury in fact, that is embraced in the standing.
Yes, it is, Your Honor.
It doesn't mean you can't go, or you should go, or you shouldn't go, or whether you would go. It's a legal issue about what standing requires.
Yes, and under the law, it says a direct unwelcome contact. In Pelfrey, this court recognized standing for plaintiffs who witnessed legislative prayers that were given on the government's website. They could have avoided the prayers. This court, as well as other circuits, have repeatedly said that it doesn't matter that the plaintiffs in Establishment Clause cases have somehow sought out the direct unwelcome contact. Here, it's more egregious.
Counsel, what's our lead case saying it doesn't matter if the plaintiffs sought out the injury or standing purpose?
There are cases that say that it doesn't matter that the plaintiff went to the court's website to look at the prayer, and that was in the Pelfrey case. It might have been in the district court decision, but I do know that this court has affirmed it, and it's part of most legislative prayer cases where the prayers are online and citizens are getting their government feed that way. Plaintiffs in Establishment Clause cases don't make money. These, if you look on this record, none of these plaintiffs are after money. They asked the government time and again to please cancel this event or to make it inclusive. The plaintiff showed up. Several of the plaintiffs showed up.
Whether they're out for money, that's irrelevant. Nope. Nobody's suggesting they're out for money.
I'm confused on why Mr. Rojas is being painted as someone who just wanted to file a lawsuit because...
No, not what... He didn't go... He went down there to observe what he knew would be a violation.
Yes, and I don't
think... That doesn't mean he wanted to file a lawsuit.
Would he be able to have standing under this scenario if he hadn't stayed back?
I think the point is there is a difference between getting injured and then going to sue. Getting injured, then deciding I'm going to sue about it. That's one thing. Deciding I'm going to sue and then going to get injured so that I can sue, that's different. And I'm not sure, I mean, and frankly, just to give you a lifeline here, I'm not sure you need to die in this ditch. I mean, like, you know, we've said in Kondratiev that one plaintiff is enough. And Rojas, to me, is uniquely troubling. The Hales, I think, frankly, have a little bit more ground to stand on. I think what you might best advance your cause by meeting Ms. Sutherland's argument that even though the Hales said we're sort of members of the community, engaged members, we care about the violence, that they didn't actually go to participate in the vigil. Yeah. They went to protest the vigil. And does that put them in Rojas land, or are they better off than Rojas?
You know, I know that Rojas, I don't need to die on this hill for because I do believe we firmly have standing with the Hales. But I am troubled by this idea that when the government takes it upon itself to violate the Constitution in a way that is, I don't know, at that time at least, as palpable as this, to say that these citizens can't challenge that because they go. I mean, I think that undermines the idea that the government is at one of limited powers. What that's saying is that the government can freely and with impunity violate the Constitution. If you're warned, you can't show up and be a citizen and care about what's happening in your community. So whether they showed up to protest or to participate and then were dismayed because the whole hour was filled with prayer, there was no discussion about what they could do to help stop the crimes or anything like that. And it was all Christian prayer. There was no other prayer, so Jewish members felt excluded. There was folks from the community that said, hey, this is being held on a high Jewish holiday, so we don't feel left, we don't feel included. Under the Supreme Court's precedents, that would warrant strict scrutiny when you have the government picking and choosing among religions. So it's not just the humanists that were affronted by this. You know, we're not relying on Lemon any more than the district court did. The district court said that this hour-long Christian worship service that mirrored a tent revival violates both the Establishment Clause and the purposes underlying the Establishment Clause, which go to the history and tradition.
Can I ask you a quick question about the test? Help me understand, when I read the docket number, 18-so-and-so, you were, no fault of your own, you got kind of whipsawed, right? I mean, like, you litigated this case in the district court under Lemon, then comes Kondratiev, then comes American Legion, then comes Kondratiev too, and now I think the landscape has kind of changed. And so I understand, now you say, like, we don't need a test, like, you don't want to bear hug Lemon, and I understand why. But, like, what's your proposal? Like, we can't just kind of freewheel it. Like, we've got to have some doctrinal test.
Sure, and I maintain that Lemon is actually useful for novel situations, and I think I pointed to a Tenth Circuit case where there was some officer who made an off remark about, you know, praise the Lord, and got sued, and the judge was like, well, what do I do with this? Like, praise the Lord, it's an off comment. Lemon was a useful thing to say, secular purpose, secular effect, let's go. When there's something that violates, like, the core reason we have the First Amendment or the Establishment Clause, in Engel, the court points out that it wasn't really just about non-preference and non-endorsement. That's kind of lemony. This is about not degrading Christian religion. This is about not letting the government wayward minister and water down prayers for the masses and take this onto the mantle of itself. So I think that when you violate a core evil of the Establishment Clause, and I laid out, you know, those kind of core reasons we have the Establishment Clause to begin with, and I think that some of those are ways you could look at it. Certainly we pass under Lemon, and I think that this court is just as bound by Lemon today as it was in the Kondratiev case 1, because Kondratiev 2 was just saying, hey, this is a
an old cross. We just decided an old cross. You have to reevaluate this.
Yeah, but didn't American Legion say, I mean, true, American Legion was a monument case, but didn't in the recitation of the sorts of cases to which the history and tradition test, whatever that is, applies, monuments, displays, and ceremonies or services or some such? And why isn't this one of those?
So you're referring to that footnote or that first line where it said,
yeah, religious displays
and then ceremonies. The ceremonies language clearly is dicta. The Supreme Court did not address religious ceremonies.
And this court, again, considered Kondratiev
to be a close call under Bladensburg and did a very close analysis of those factors
and
considered and said, you know what, Lemon does not apply when we're dealing with an old monument. What the court is essentially saying from those cases is that it has a presumptive secular purpose because it's old, it has multiple, you know, owners, it's been transferred a couple times. We can't source this from the government, and the religious purpose is lost in antiquity. Secondly, the effect, you know, it's over time, it's taken on a new meaning. I think you pointed out, Mr. Newsom, Judge Newsom, in your concurrence that I think, or maybe the second opinion, that even Satanists had been using the cross as indication that it was no longer just seen as Christian. And I think in this case, this was so overwhelmingly wrought with government purpose to endorse prayer. It said so in the letter. It said so in the Facebook page, which, by the way, the plaintiffs did not choose to encounter the Facebook message that invited them to come. And the mayor and the police chief both personally engaged my clients in inviting them to come and said, no, it's not just going to be prayer. We are going to talk about other stuff. So there are emails on this record that indicate personally inviting our clients, which I think takes it far beyond a Valley Forge and far beyond those just witnessing the cross thing. I mean, I think if you were to substitute my clients with, you know, Christian plaintiffs, and this was a Muslim prayer service, or the police department in Berkeley, and they had, you know, some New Age religion, I think you guys would readily find standing. And so I encourage you to try to look at this.
I'm going to assume that what you didn't mean by that is that if the tables were turned, this panel would come to a different decision.
Well, Your Honor, it's
a little bit challenging to feel after what happened in the Kondratiev case that, withstanding, at least, that I'm not going to face substantial hurdles. And I feel a little bit concerned that if the court is so concerned with Rojas's testimony that he was about to witness a violation and went to go witness it and saw the violation happen, that the concern is that Mr. Rojas's testimony, rather than the government, this flagrantly violating the Constitution. And I think it's really important that there is fairness, because I think, I mean, that's what the First Amendment requires. So I just, that's my hope.
Okay, very well.
Yes.
Thank you very much, Ms. Miller.
Thank you.
Oh, I got one more question.
Counsel,
yep.
Counsel, it's more of a statement. Offensively. But there's sometimes a line between vigorous advocacy and antagonism. And you seem to take this all personally. I can assure you there's not a member of this court that takes this personally. And I like your zeal and everything, but it's not about you, and it's not about us. It's about the issue and the facts, and the longer and better we can keep it about that, the more conducive to what we're all here for. It is a correct decision. It will be. And I'm like Jim Newsom, your argument about if it was Muslims that are New Age Berkeley, I'll let Berkeley speak for itself, but you know, that gets close to being offensive. And it's not going to make any difference. Us when we decide the case, but at the same time, you're young, and for future purposes, just in case there are other people who can't distinguish the advocate from the issues, you might want to think about that.
I appreciate that, Your Honor, and I do have a lot of zeal. I think partially because I've been doing this law for a decade and just sort of you know, feeling like when I see a violation that feels this egregious to be here, just I am taking it personally, and I appreciate that professional advice, and we'll take it to heart.
And you need to keep in mind on oral argument that the questions are to help us, and they're designed to be about consciously or subconsciously. They're designed to be about what we perceive to be weaknesses in the case. That doesn't mean that we are adopting those weaknesses as the decision. There's a reason that the attorney who gets the most questions, they say, people who've studied it, often ends up losing the case. That's because we're trying to probe the weaknesses. We're trying to give an opportunity. When I was, and I did quite a bit of it, appellate advocacy, the first thing that came to my mind when I got a cut off question was, thank you. It gives me an opportunity to try to disabuse you of that totally illogical, ridiculous position that you were formulating in that question. But I didn't say that. I'm glad you specialize. It gives us the benefit of your specialization and expertise.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you. And with that, I will.
Thank you, Ms. Miller. Very well. Thank you so much. Ms. Sutherland? Abby? You guys have seen one another before?
Just two or three points on standing and two or three points very quickly on the Establishment Clause. With regards to standing, I do want to make clear here that municipal taxpayer standing is not an issue in this case. And so the claim that there could be taxpayer standing, it can't be determined here. It was dismissed. That claim was dismissed at the motion to dismiss stage for failure to make proper allegations. It was never appealed. And so standing has to lie on the facts and testimony that have been discussed today. I did just want to point out that with regards to the claim of exclusion, there is evidence in the record that indicates that when a private citizen had reached out to Chief Graham, he put them in contact with the private organizers and strongly encouraged that individual to take part in helping plan and lead the event. The record is devoid of any evidence that the plaintiffs attempted to help lead or participate in planning the vigil. I think had they done so, they may not have felt excluded here. I just think it's important to note that. I also wanted to mention two lower court opinions in this circuit. I think in their attempt to reconcile what is obviously very confusing standing precedent in the circuit and others on Establishment Clause. The first is American Atheists Incorporated v. Levy County. It was decided by the Northern District of Florida in 2017. And in that case, the district court had found that the plaintiff lacked standing for his past alleged injury because it was a single event. And there was testimony that he had encountered the monument purposefully. And then in an earlier case, or a much older case, Alabama Freethought Association v. Moore, decided by the Northern District of Alabama in 1995. In that case, it involved the Ten Commandments display in the courtroom. And in attempting to reconcile precedent, the court found that here, the plaintiff's momentary exposure to the monument or to the commandments in the courtroom without more was insufficient to support standing. The court actually noted that there was no evidence that that plaintiff would return to the courtroom. And based upon that, the court did not find any type of metaphysical or spiritual injury.
Can I ask you a question, a standing question? So forget about Rojas. The Hales, who said that they were community members, were concerned about the violence, would love to, sort of participate in a vigil, and I'm characterizing or paraphrasing, but would love to participate in a vigil, but went and felt like they were excluded from this one. Given our precedent that says, in any event, that you don't have to change your behavior to have standing, right? I think it's pretty clear from Rabin and Kondratiev that we do not require a plaintiff to, like, walk around the park, right? What more would the Hales needed to have said to get them standing?
I think here what makes this case distinguishable from one where an individual had indicated from the very beginning that they wanted to be a part of the vigil. They expressed interest in participating, even planning, and then were either rejected and prevented from participating and or showed up to participate. Those facts are very different than plaintiffs here who said from the outset, we heard about the vigil and we wanted to attend to see the violation. They then testified later that they wanted to be a part of it, that they felt excluded. But their intent from the outset is very clear. Their intent was to attend the vigil to oppose what they believed would be a constitutional violation. I think that's an interesting conflict of if you go with the intent to oppose it, how then can you also be excluded?
So I guess, though, the difference is I feel like we might just be slicing the bologna a little thin. I mean, if they go knowing they're going to be offended, but we're going anyway, we're going to, like, knuckle up and go. We're going to be offended, but we're going to go. That's okay, it sounds like. Now you've got standing because you just kind of, you know, you bellied up to the bar and you went. But if you go with the intent to be offended, then that's no. You see how razor fine that distinction seems?
It is razor fine. I would submit to you that typically these cases are determined on that type of fact scenario. Many times they turn. You can have two very similar cases and one fact, such as they won't return to the monument again, or they will, is the determining factor. Also, with regards to exclusion, Raven has spoken on metaphysical and spiritual injury or harm. The Supreme Court has been very clear about offense and exclusion. And I think there's a difference here. And I hope that we made that clear in our brief. A one-time offense or exclusion, which the Supreme Court has denounced as sufficient for standing, versus a metaphysical and spiritual harm, which every time that has been found, there has been regular contact, which would more understandably result in that type of injury, an injury sufficient to confer standing. If I could, I just want to read a quote from Judge Gorsuch on standing in the American Legion case, because he attempts to summarize some opinions offered by justices over the years on this issue.
So I think in fairness, just because we've let you go longer than I think we let Ms. Miller know, I know about the Gorsuch concurrence. I think my colleagues do as well. We can read that for ourselves. That's all good. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, very well. Well done, both sides. Thank you so much. That case is submitted. We will be in recess until tomorrow morning at 9 a.m.
All right.
Yes, sir.